Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Weather remains fairly mixed across the country with many fields still saturated after heavy rain across the country. Once again, I'm joined by Adam Woods, Darren Carty and Martin Merrick to talk all things farming. Later in the show, I'll be joined by the Border Fox, Alan Green, and all the way from New Zealand to hear what's happening over there. As normal, to start, a quick fire questions for Adam, Darren and Martin. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 0868366465. Adam, ask Adam, do you have a rule of thumb on when it is too dry to spread urea, which isn't protected? Is urea okay if weather is nice and dry, but there is a day or night do you need rain? Not an issue right now, but planning ahead on how much to buy. Love the show, Adrian. So Adam, he's looking ahead and he's saying, listen, there's plenty of moisture now in the ground, but he's talking about, look, I suppose, buying fertilizer and getting a half a load or a load. So, you know, when is it too dry to spread protected urea?
So look, Jack, you probably need a bit of rain, maybe forecast for the next 48 hours. Now, a bit of rain, not heavy rain, obviously, but you need damp, sort of cold conditions for that ordinary urea to really work well. You know, drying conditions, you know, sometimes in April we can get that sort of an east wind comes in and that'd be detrimental to urea working. So just need to be careful there. And I know protected urea is more expensive, but if you thought it was going to be April, maybe May time when you're spreading it, you definitely probably have to go the protected route. At the moment, I know in the south, you know, ground conditions in the northwest, you couldn't look at fertilizer at the moment, but in the south, probably maybe you might still get away on some areas, like urea is still fine because there's lots of moisture in the ground, it's cold, it's messy, so it's fine. But no, later on, I'd say
Excellent. There's a big article on that there this week on the Dairy Pages. Brian McCarty and his colleagues there in Chagas have a piece on protected urea, and they did a trial spreading it right throughout the year, comparing it to can and comparing it to ordinary urea. So there's lots more in that there, as Adam says. Darren, quick question for you. I have a question for Darren here. I have a big white Texelio and she's going over on her back every day now. She's scanned with triplets and due in 2 weeks. What can I do? Love the pod, Brian and Galway. Talk to me, Darren.
Jeannie Jack, just bring her indoors or else you'll be bringing her to the knackery. That's about the size of it. There isn't a lot more you can do with this, but they don't tend to go on the back as much indoors. So
right,
that's the only solution for now.
And if she does, you'll see her, you'll walk into her. That's what you were saying, kind of. And the crows or the foxes won't be at her when she's turned over. Excellent. Martin, one quick fire for you. County Cork dairy farmer here, wondering if there has been any updates on the accelerated capital allowances for slurry storage announced in last year's budget. Was there some talk that it must be completed by June of this year? Is planning required? Are there any terms and conditions necessary? Martin, four questions in one. Take the first one first in terms of any updates on the accelerated capital allowance job.
No updates as yet, Jack. The farmer is right in saying there that there was a rule in place that there was going to be 6 months only for this work. When it was announced initially, it was going to be for a 3-year project. But what happened was, because of the agricultural block exemption rule, they could only legislate it for the first 6 months this year. The department have gotten back to us and said the plan is that this will be a 3-year scheme, so farmers don't need to panic and have all works completed by June. As regards plan and permission, Jack, plan and permission is required for nearly every farm building at this stage.
And then his last one was a very big one. Any terms and conditions necessary?
No. With it being a tax scheme, Jack, the main thing would be whatever year you're planning on using it for, we say you're breaking over 2 years, it has to be paid for. So we say if for 2023, it's no good in you having the work complete in November this year and only writing the check to the contractor in January, you won't be able to use that for your 2023 tax records.
Okay. I might touch off you again in the main show there later on, Martin. Back to you in a bit. Adam, I come to you first. It's fair to say it's all about the skip this week. Tell us, you know, the kind of the key details, I suppose, and any changes that have happened kind of since, I suppose, it was formally announced. Like we've known about this coming a bit, but this is the first real kind of detail that we've had on it.
Yeah, I suppose well flagged, Jack, since the budget, almost as regards the new scheme, the replacement for BDGP. I suppose a couple of surprises. The biggest surprise were the 22 cows. So that when this was announced first, it was €150 a cow for the first 10 cows. But the big surprise this week was it's €150 a cow on the first 22 cows. So that increases the payment rate to a lot of farmers, because obviously the average, you know, size of the suckler herd is average under 20. So that's going to, you know, really benefit a lot of people around the country, a lot of suckler farmers. The other change is that in terms of, we talked about this, I think, on last week's show about the 4 and 5 star status of the sires of the calves in year one of the program. So year one of the program goes from the 1st of July 22 to the 30th of June 23. And under the terms and conditions of the program, 80% of the sires of the calves needed to be 4 or 5 star either on the terminal or the replacement index. Farm organizations met the Department of Agriculture, said this is unworkable because obviously these cows went in calf back in 2022. We didn't know about this requirement. We need a derogation there for year one. So the department have come back, they looked to Brussels, got the derogation for year one. So there is no requirement to have 80% sire, 4 or 5 star sire calves in year one. That will come in year two and three, and it rises to we'll say up to 90% as we go on to year five. The other sort of changes are, you know, I went to a meeting in Mullingar Tuesday night. The big area of contention is Boar Bia quality assurance, but look at that's there and it's going to be there. Damien Murray from Boar Bia was there, and he just talked about, and this is important for listeners and people viewing in, the 16th of October is the date that you need to be approved, fully approved, quality assured in the scheme. So I asked Damien Murray what's the lead-in time at the moment, and he was saying sort of leave 2 months to allow maybe for a bit of an issue and then to go back and check it again or whatever. So really, really important that farmers get in gear there and get into that application, because look at...
And Adam, so what you're saying to me then is by the middle of August, you'd kind of, you know, as in you can't leave it to the end of October, middle of October, like,
Yeah, no, it's not good enough to just fire in an application the 1st of October and then you'll be okay. That won't be okay. You'll be basically dumped out of the scheme before you get the first payment. Damien also said that 53% of BDGP participants are currently quality assured. So that means maybe they're targeting 20,000 for the scheme, Jack. So it's 8,000 or 10,000 extra new quality assurance applications will come in over the next couple of months. They're getting about 300 new applications a week at the moment. They're taking on new auditors, but really important to get that in train as regards quality assurance. Other small changes. They seem to be a lot more strict on deadlines, Jack, this time. So the genotyping has to be completed, I think it's by the 30th of November. Weighing has to be completed by the 1st of November. So they're going to be really, really strict on those deadlines this time. Where in BDGP, there was a little bit of leeway there around, well, look, if you got the samples in any time, you get paid. But it seems to be a lot more stricter this time. So applications open, agfood.ie. And I'd say, look, at everybody out there should look at it, because it's a decent payment on a suckler farm.
Adam, like, you know, standing back from the detail and touch, like, I mean, is this a real shot in the arm for the suckler sector? Now, I'll talk to you in a minute about your piece. You have a great feature piece there in terms of suckler numbers and where they've gone and how they've changed over the last 10 years, you know. But, I mean, is this, you know, a real, you know, I mean, as you say, for like, it seems to me to be hitting a lot of the suckler farmers out there that can apply for it, albeit there are certain hurdles to jump through Boar Bia and a few bits and pieces.
Actually, look, Jack, you can look at it two ways. I suppose it is, and obviously Beep as well was announced. Minister told us that this week that he'll guarantee the 28 million there when we ring fence for sucklers. Details of that in the next 4 weeks. So that's another maybe 65 euros a cow. So up to 200 euros a cow there in support. But I suppose with my positive hat on, that's brilliant, and it's a great shot in the arm for suckler cows, and it's needed. With my negative hat on, it's probably only compensating, Jack, where entitlements are going on those farms, because beef farmers and suckler farmers would have had good value entitlements. They're seeing them being absolutely eroded over the next 5 years. We've talked a lot about this over the last couple of months. So
now, not all of them, Adam. Like, not all.
Well, a lot of them, Jack, to be honest. No, a lot of them, Jack, is up, we'll say, a higher than average. We'll say maybe some smaller farms aren't, and there are low value entitlements out there. But I would say any we'll say suckler farm that was pushing on is definitely seeing a hit on single farm payment, and this is just going to compensate them.
Okay. Tell me about the piece around suckler cow numbers and how things have changed over the last 10 years. It's not a very long time, like, you know what I mean? But there has been significant changes.
Yeah, huge change, Jack. Like, if we look at, you know, the counties, that hinterland, the sort of Tipperary, Kilkenny and Waterford, Tipperary 31% down, Waterford 39% down, Kilkenny 33% down in suckler numbers. So basically they've just moved over to dairying, because if we put on the heat map of dairy cow numbers increasing, we see huge increases in dairy cow numbers in those counties. So while suckler numbers have went down, dairy cow numbers have went up. And I suppose, look, at the level of economic activity and agricultural economic activity in those counties would have went up because of those increased dairy cow numbers. What's a little bit concerning, I suppose, is along the Western Seaboard, where real traditional suckler counties, and we're still seeing maybe between 11 and 14% decline in suckler cow numbers along those counties. And you just wonder what the options are there as regards what else is going on in those farms. Or are they just cutting back and reducing, or is it a function of reducing stocking rates and easing back? And will we see more of that in the future? I think we will. Like, there is a thinking out there that maybe these farms will switch to dairy calves, but come to West Cavan or the hills of Mayo, Jack, and try and rear dairy calves. And, like, you know, a suckler cow, we've said it before, she'll go up the hill and she'll rear a calf, and you'll pull a calf back down at 300 kilos, but put a dairy calf up there, and they may not do as well, you know.
They need the good grass, and you, as you say, to make it work then for the farmer, you need enough of that to stock them fairly well and manage that system. But come back to me then on the front page. You have a front page this week, like, in terms of the 200 euros per cow, in terms of where that comes out. Like, the skep isn't 200 euros a cow.
No, so this is going back to that beep scheme. So the skep is 150 for the first 22, then 120 after that. And then the beep scheme, which is 28 million. Now, we're expecting measures in the beep scheme. The weigh-in has gone into the skep. So the weigh-in's gone out of beep, but we're expecting maybe vaccination of weanlings, maybe meal feeding of weanlings, maybe fecal sampling to assess dosing need for winter. We may see silage sampling in there. So it's little bits and pieces there. And I know there is a cost maybe associated with that with beep, but still it's another maybe 65 euros a cow. And that will be announced, he said, in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, excellent. I'm going to leave it at that for the moment, Adam, in terms of the skep job, like, you know, because we're going to have a skep special next week. Is that fair to say? And we'll have a couple of specialists in a couple of months.
Yeah, and get questions in, Jack. I'm getting loads of questions there already. Look at around reference numbers and what happens if I took over the herd number. Look, we want questions in like that for next week's show, so we can put it to the department and ICBF and whoever else, and we'll be able to answer the questions then next Friday night.
Excellent. Okay. Farm Tech Talk at farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 0868366465. Trade, Adam, just give me a feel for trade, up or down?
Yeah, I suppose if we start with the March trade, maybe a little bit tempered this week, probably wet weather hitting it a wee bit. You know, those dairy stock, maybe around that 300-400 kilo mark, is probably a little bit easier. But talking to lads buying cattle, maybe 50, 60 euros. March very small, and I'd say we'll whittle the grass now till that really kicks on again in another couple of weeks, and maybe weather gets a little bit better. In general, beef trade pretty steady, 525 for bullocks, 530 for heifers. Factory starting to move to manage the kill. Speaking to a few people this week working in the industry, and they're sort of saying that they need given the energy costs and the associated costs of running a factory and staff costs, they need a certain number of cattle to throughput that factory to cover costs, I suppose, as regards opening it up. And they're not getting those cattle at the moment because the cattle kill is so small. 29,000 last week was a four-day kill. We're going to see a couple of four-day kills over the next few weeks because we've Easter coming in, Good Friday is another four-day week, Bank Holiday Monday, another four-day week. We're seeing factories drop in some cases to 3 days of a kill because they can put through the cattle that they're getting in 3 days. There's a little bit of management there too, because they don't need to force out to buy cattle then or whatever over the next couple of weeks. They're still moving to those bigger feedlots. 35,500 cattle killed out of controlled finishing units in February. We got those figures this week. But I think, it's pretty steady. Looking to the north, Davy Wright this week, 4.6 pence up. Looking to the UK, they broke six euros this week. So it's all looking pretty positive. And I think, if we look at kill numbers, we're exactly the same as 2022. We should have been down 5 or 6% for Q1. We're not down that. So I think that gives greater confidence to push out this high price for another little while into the summer.
Excellent. You touched off the weather, Adam. Like, how is it affecting farms up your neck of the woods?
Gosh, it's a disaster. It's an absolute quagmire this week. Wet, torrential rain, cattle back in, ewes back in some cases. It's that way. Look, it's been a real dirty week. Looking to the forecast, the weekend is giving a little bit better. And look, things can change around really, really quick this time of the year. But it's been a tough week, to be honest, as regards stock out. And look, at sheds under pressure now in some cases because stock were out. And I guess you move things around yards to alleviate the thing when stock go out. But when they come back in, it's back into full flow again. So just on the management, we're saying straw, feed, everything just back into full flow in the yard.
Keep the basics right. Okay, get your questions in for the Skip special next week. Farm Tech Talks at farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 0868366465. Thanks, Adam. Chat to you next week. Darren, weather, I'll start there with you. I finished with Adam on weather. I'll start there with you. Like, I mean, impacting your guys, maybe not as much.
No, Jack, I'd say probably more so, maybe depending on if you're lambing. Now, if you're, I suppose it's all on what's happening at home. So if you're lambing at the moment and you're in peak lambing this week and maybe shed space has been tight, you're under severe pressure. If you're coming towards into lambing, you probably have plenty of space out, but then your problems go from the shed out into the fields and trying to get things set up and trying to get things managed there. So I think it's all, I suppose, maybe around what is happening. And then there's a big variation between regions. We were in Tullamore there yesterday, sorry, Wharf, and while land is wet, it's not near as wet from where, say, Martin or myself was coming from, and has the potential to dry quicker. But in general, most farmers are facing significant challenges just at the moment. Just with ground conditions are so poor, grass utilization is low, and the consequences then of having to bring in and feed is probably the big one.
And Darren, just do the timing on it. I mean, the hill flocks, like we'll say, they're not lambing yet, am I right? Or what's the light around there?
So some of the earlier hill flocks now, Jack, would be lambing. So some of the ones that would be, say, pushing out your, say, mule, your lambs for sales in the back end of the year, or some of the ones on maybe greener hills, that they would be, I suppose, maybe the 20th of March, 25th of March onwards type of job. Whereas you're more, I suppose, exposed hill, or maybe the way to describe it is where your hill, your yows are maybe lambing out the hill or taking down to a small bit of green ground, they're generally sort of April sort onwards.
Yes.
But it's there would be some of them, I suppose, gone that way.
I hear you. Like, yeah, exactly. No, there's a bit of a range. The trade, Darren, like we mentioned Ramadan last week. Like, I mean, it's what impact is it having on the trade?
Sure, it's boosting it, Jack. It's really driving on demand. Ramadan started Wednesday. Best demand, obviously, is at the start, but I suppose the first week, there's always good demand. The big thing this year that's probably going to help us, similar to the last year, is this, where you normally would get a lull in demand in the middle of Ramadan. That's probably going to be boosted now, or there's going to be a good flow underneath it, because buying for Easter will start very soon, Easter Sunday on the 9th of April, and then you're back into the end of Ramadan on the 20th of April. So factories are going to need significant numbers for the next few weeks. On top of that, the supplies in New Zealand are down, and a big benefit, Jack, in the last 10 days has been a strengthening in the British trade. We talked or touched on that last week. That is, I suppose, a big one in allowing Irish plants to move on, to increase prices and still compete competitively in EU markets. Like, where you're looking at the trade this week, base quote 635 to 650, add on the quality assurance bonuses and all quality assured hoggets without any negotiate are starting upwards of 650 per kilo, and a lot of sheep moving between 660 and 670, and then at the top of the market, you're up to 680 with bonuses. Probably one of the things that has stagnated a small bit is the MAR trade. The MAR trade was running ahead of, say, the factory trade there for a few weeks. And I think it's a reluctance of factories to sanction that sort of €7 a kilo. They don't want to be seen to pay €7 a kilo. And I'm hearing that a lot of the agents that will be handling big numbers or specialist finishers, that has been tough going, that some of them have given weight rather than giving it, maybe given 690, 695 a kilo. And that has sort of put, I suppose, maybe a top end on what they can afford to pay in the marts. And I suppose in recent weeks, we've seen prices increase €2-3 per week, whereas this week is sort of steadied because that sort of, I suppose, it has sort of plateaued on what they can extract from the factories.
Okay, I hear you. Like, Darren, you have a piece there on so it's in a summary, it's positive on the trade and things are looking up on that side. In terms of the, you have a piece there on the Sheep Ireland levy. So this, the Sheep Ireland, I call it the ICBF of the cattle world and the dairy world. Sheep Ireland are affected. They punch the numbers, trying to kind of look closer at genetics and trying to get those genetics onto farms. And there's a levy there. Just bring me back in terms of what that levy is used for, we'll say, and what this piece of increasing the levy is about.
Yeah, so I say Sheep Ireland would have been charged the same as ICBF with implementing the National, say, Sheep Breed Improvement Programme. So they're funded mainly by the Department of Agriculture. They also generate some funds by, say, charges from breed societies in participating in the likes of the Land Plus programme. But in 2012, I suppose, to try and drive on or to try and increase the range of services they offered, there was a levy, a National Sheep Breed Improvement Levy introduced, 7 cents per head on sheep that are killed in the main, in the five main factories. So, say, your two IC implants, Navan and Camoden, they're chilling, Keepack in at League, and Dawn Meats and Ballyharness. It's not charged in the like, say, a sheep killed in Jennings or Ballon Meats or, say, smaller abattoirs. It's just the five main ones. So it essentially has generated about 180,000 per annum. And that pot of money has gone in. And I suppose Sheep Ireland would say that they targeted it in recent years in bringing in initiatives such as subsidizing genotyping. So, say, trying to get the rollout of genomics and trying to increase, I suppose, maybe the amount of stuff they're doing, like new stuff like methane analysis, like expanding the range of traits. And I suppose the big one that they're looking at from here on in is implementing a Hill Sheep Breed Improvement Programme, getting more into sort of the methane analysis and also into looking at antimicrobial resistance. They're the three that they have, I suppose, maybe earmarked that the extra $200,000 that will come in to the levy increase from 7 cents per head to 15 cents per head. That's where that money is targeted for.
Okay. And are you positive on it, Darren, as an investment for the sector? Like, I mean, is there enough of good work going on, and are the results showing in terms of that when you put a pot of funds together and invest it in the sector, that it can deliver?
Yeah, look at that. I think if we look at ICBF or we look at Sheep Ireland, Jack, and part of our role is to question the value for money, question what's happening there. And you would always want some things maybe to be done a little bit better or improvements to be made here or there. But I think we've got to a stage on the Hill Sheep Breeding Programme that there's been a lot of false dawns. And if we don't get a breeding programme over the line and don't get, say, some traction there on recording, you could really say you'd really struggle to get any traction from there on in. If you look at the numbers of breeds that are participating in the Land Plus programme, it's gone from, I suppose, a handful of your main breeds a decade ago, like you had your Texas Suffolk Charlies, but now you have nearly 17 flock books on the Sheep Ireland books. You've gone from 280, say, pedigree breeders participating in Land Plus, so I think it'll be over 1,300 this year. And that's a positive for commercial farmers because, like, one of the things we often, I suppose, maybe struggle with is this pedigree breeding isn't aligned in a lot of cases with what the commercial farmer wants. It's more for the show scene. It's maybe sometimes about the rosettes. And in an Irish context, your pedigree breeds are pedigree flocks. Now, this is a sweeping brush. I know I'm going to get criticism for this, but it's generally, I suppose, smaller flocks. There isn't the same selection yeah. intensity that might be there in other countries, and you see maybe some sheep entering the say the sector that mightn't be have the desirable traits. But I think the Sheep Ireland program, in being able to take or test the genetic evaluations through things like, say, linking up with Chagas flocks, linking up with other commercial flocks through this central progeny test,
yeah.
and create linkages. I think that that has to be supported, because I think that's where we need to get to is more data along with, say, physical performance, physical characteristics. And if that is this levy, I think that, yes, it is positive. But I to say on top of that is to make sure that farmers continue to get value for money. We'll be continuing to keep an eye, as I think the industry should, on where funds are, and always holds, I think, these companies to account. I think that is important.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Firm but fair. Like, yeah. Darren, so excellent. So I'm taking it, as you say, that look, it's an investment in the sector, and if it's targeted in the right areas, it's positive for all sheep farmers. That kind of a small bit goes a long way in terms of an investment. Leave it at that on the sheep side, Darren. Two quick ones on I suppose, some of the questions that have been coming in. You've been getting a lot of questions on, I suppose, if someone was considering selling entitlements, there is an amnesty, of course, in terms of the 20% clawback is not there for 23 and 24 if you were selling entitlements. But there are taxation issues to consider.
Yeah, Jack. So after last, I suppose, the recent 2 weeks articles, we would have mentioned, say, capital gains tax. We never went into it in great depth. I suppose it's a separate side. It's not the Department of Agriculture's remit. It's revenue, say, that looks after the capital gains tax. There has been no changes there. So for the majority of farmers selling entitlements, they are liable to capital gains tax at 33%. So a third of the value of your entitlements will be lost to revenue. And I think that's a big element that a lot of farmers maybe so overlook at the time of selling entitlements, but it's something to be cognizant of. And I have a lot of questions this week from farmers wondering, are they better to sell the entitlements given where capital gains tax is, or take a lower return on the leasing of entitlements and still have the entitlements in a few years' time? And look, at it's going to change, I suppose. Every farm is different. Every farm has to look at its own circumstances. But it's something we went to IFAC this week and we asked them to lay down, say, what exactly are the rules? Because there is some relief for the likes of farmers who maybe bought entitlements or to inheritance or gift, or there's an entrepreneur relief there. So there's a piece on Inside Back that goes through those different types of measures. I've already got a few, say, follow-on questions from that piece that we'll put to IFAC and carry in next week. And I think, look, as Adam said on the skeptic earlier on, if farmers have questions on that, that's something that we're happy to put to IFAC or happy to put to specialists to get the letter of the law, because as you and I know, Jack, the last person you want to be on the wrong side of is the tax man. So
no, absolutely. So again, as you say, any queries on that in terms of entitlements or selling them, 086-836-6465 or email farmtechtalk at farmersjournal.ie. I mean, the last one, Darren, soil sampling, that liming program. Again, there's, farmers asking questions about why is the soil sample necessary to get that lime subsidy?
Yep. So from the department's point of view, it's, I suppose, maybe showing value for money, everything that they do, there has to be a demonstrated need. So the soil sample simply demonstrates that soil is needed, and that there's a lot of good questions I'm getting in particular is from farmers that don't have soil samples at the moment but are keen to join up to the program. You can have, you or your advisor can put an estimate on what, say, line that you want to apply or that you think will be applied. You can put that figure into the application, go ahead and get your soil samples now, and then tally up after whether the soil samples show that there's demonstrated need. Because I suppose you'll get an approval on a figure to spread lime, and the soil sample, say, justification is taken at the point of purchase of the lime. So as long as you have soil samples to show a demonstrated need by the time that you're going to buy the lime, you're okay on that. The other quick question that we're getting is, can I spread lime now? Some of them are coming from tillage farmers. Yes, you can, as long as you have your application put in. So when you have your application put in, you can go ahead and buy land. Only caveat that to Jack, to this Jack, and it's an important caveat, is just say you put in that your site sample show you need 140 ton of land. You put in that in the application, you go ahead and you put out that 140 ton of land. If the scheme is oversubscribed, the department might reduce back or use a coefficient to reduce back the approval, say, for everybody. So just be aware that there is no guarantee that the figure that you put in, you will get that whole figure.
Okay, I hear you. Absolutely. It could be tapered back. Excellent, Aaron. 100%. Thanks for the updates this week on the sheep side of the house and on the schemes in terms of where we are. And no doubt we'll come to some of the SCEP schemes. You've lots of questions again. I'm sure you're getting on the SCEP thing. So we get that into our SCEP special next week, next Friday night. So chat to you then. Martin Merrick, our building specialist. Martin, thanks for coming on the show. I mean, you answered that question on the accelerated capital allowance. I mean, it's one that has kind of it annoyed some farmers when that piece came out, when the pressure came on that it was the 1st of June or the end of June in terms of having that work completed. But as you say, we have no further confirmation, Martin, on that. But we have a kind of, I call it, we have word from the department that it is a 3-year program, that it is going to run for another 3 years. Like, isn't that fair to say?
Yeah, no, they like that. When we broke that story, Jack, we had contacted the department. After we broke the story, they came back and said to us, no, our intention is that this will be a 3-year program. It would have been only a novelty if it was for 6 months, because the time is taken for farmers to organize with contractors and everything. Talking to a lot of farm building contractors, they have 6 months work on the book all the time. So, and like I said, planned permission is required for these jobs. So that's going to take another couple of months as well. But no, farmers shouldn't panic. The department have confirmed to us that it will be run for the 3 years.
It will stay going. You have another nice piece this week, Martin, on I suppose that whole piece around TAMs for milking equipment for dairy farmers. You were keeping tabs on a department meeting this week on it was a webinar actually, I think, wasn't it, on the TAMs and a kind of an update on some of the schemes. Just tell me about that. What exactly was that meeting?
Yeah, the department had a webinar there yesterday for the launch of TAMs 3, as it's been known. I suppose it's a very good scheme, but some of the dairy equipment and such has been removed from it. We see like some rotary parlors and that, and limitations have been put on farmers as regards the amount of cows they can have. So it's 120 cows for any farmer, we say a mature farmer looking to invest in milking equipment, or 160 cows for anyone under the Young Farmer Capital Investment Scheme. Further to that, Jack, they've also added in a stipulation on slurry storage. So what the department have told us is that for farmers applying for grant aid for milking equipment, which is the maximum you can apply for, is either 10 units for a parlour or one robot. For that, you have to have 10% extra slurry storage than required, and that must be owned. So it's no good in going down the road and renting a shed off a beef farmer or another dairy farmer or whatever. You have to own the slurry storage. The department have said that they will grant aid slurry storage the same as they would have previously. But that has to be in place before you can apply for TAMS aid for any milking equipment.
Okay. So you need that little bit of extra slurry storage. I mean, just in terms of investment, Martin, like, I mean, here we are speaking kind of towards the end of March. If guys were considering silage bases now, you know, I mean, you often see silage bases going down in May and June, a couple of weeks before the grass comes onto it. Like, you'd want to be kind of lining up a job now. If you were thinking of a new silage pit or our walls or whatever around a silage pit or resurfacing, like, you'd want to be kind of getting in tune now and getting kind of a bit of a plan around it and getting doing it now to give it a chance, wouldn't you?
Yeah, at the very minimum, Jack, you'd want to be given it 28 days before any equipment or any silage has been put on that base. So yeah, farmers should, I know the weather at the minute isn't really playing ball for any concrete work, but they should be talking to their farm building contractor and getting things planned out. Now, there might be some silage still on existing slabs if they're planning on resurfacing or whatever, but definitely get it in the plan, talk to your farm building contractor. Get any materials such as reinforcing steel or whatever in place, get that ready there, sitting in the yard, and get planned for that. It really is, we say, we're seeing heavier and heavier equipment all the time. as regard pit silage. So the longer you give your concrete slab to cure, the stronger it's going to be. 28 days it has over 90% of its strength at that stage. It's fairly safe. But and just another thing, Jack, as well, I've touched on in an article this week. For any works, we say concrete works or garden, slurry store or silage stores, such as your slabs, your walls, effluent tanks for that, for collecting effluent off those, that has to be a minimum of 45 Newton concrete. So usually for farm building work, you're talking 37 Newtons, but because of the corrosive nature of the silage effluent, it has to be a minimum of 45 Newtons.
Okay. And Martin, is that a department spec piece, or is that that, listen, if this is going to last and you want to do the right job, you want to be putting in the right concrete, and hence you should be going for 45 Newton for those places that are in touch with concrete or in touch with slurry or silage effluent that are highly corrosive? Like, are you saying the 45 is kind of, it's the best job to make that piece last, to make that investment last?
Yeah, it is the department standard, and for any farmer that has applied in TAMS 2 or is going to be applying in TAMS 3, that will be, well, we haven't got the spec for TAMS 3, but it'll be expected to still be 45, if not a bit stronger. But definitely, even grant aside, 45 Newton should be what farmers are putting in. The value for money that you're going to get out of using a lesser type of concrete, you know, you're talking about 10% less than the in price wise. So no, absolutely go for your 45 Newton all day.
Okay, and the same way then, Martin, if you were just kind of, I'll call it resurfacing, you know, a square of concrete, we'll say where there was jeeps or cars turning, etc., and that kind of thing, you know, and maybe you know it's not in contact, we'll say, on a kind of a daily basis with effluent or with slurry. I mean, does that need to be 45 Newton then, like we'll say, in the kind of, you know, for that yard resurfacing type work?
No, every other kind of building work that's done on the farm would be done to 37 Newton strength, Jack. Even, we say, some farmers I know use existing slurry storage tanks. They use that for the effluent during the summer months or whatever. The department are saying that that's fine to use 37 Newton for that, as long as it isn't specifically for just collecting silage effluent that's also used for the slurry stores. 37 Newtons is fine for any other kind of building works, including your walls and sheds, your walls and tanks, floors, everything like that. So no, any other general work, you wouldn't need the 45 Newtons. Just because of the corrosive nature of the effluent, it's recommended.
Yeah, no, absolutely loud and clear. Martin, you're obviously based up in the Northwest in terms of, and yet you're talking to a lot of farmers right across the country, I'll say, on a weekly basis, and you cover off a lot of work on the Grasswatch side of things for us. There's a fair variation, and we heard it there obviously from Adam, in terms of the Northwest, it seems to have got a lot of rain in the last week, and it's impacting on stock out. And we talked to Darren, and he's down in Tullamore. He was down there yesterday, and he said there was, you know, the same impact or the same rainfall wasn't having the same impact on farms. I mean, there's a fair variation there across the country. Like, did you pick that up in kind of some of the phone calls this week?
Yeah, definitely, Jack. What I'm generally seeing is in the West and Northwest, either farmers are in full time or they're very cautious in doing a small bit of on-off grazing, whereas down in the south and southeast, and you're better for your draining soils. Farmers are still practicing on-off grazing down there, but they're telling me that damage is very superficial. It's not really causing much of a headache for them. Some of them are getting cows out full-time during the day and getting them out again at night for a couple hours, but there's very few farmers now right across the country that have cows out full-time. Different story back in February and the beginning of March. Even farmers in the West and Upper Adam is there in the border counties and some of that heavier soil, they had cows out full time, do no damage, and it just turned there on a pin. And look, as Adam said earlier, it can change just as quickly as it changed from good to bad. It can change again. Another couple of dry days, we're promised a couple of good days over the weekend. It might just give lads a chance to get some stock back out again.
Yeah,
because a good amount of stock were turned out, including suckler cows and some those with lambs, and they've had to come back in, and it is putting pressure on housing.
Okay, but as you say, at this time of the year, end of March, daylight getting a bit more, and if you get a kind of a couple of days together at all, it would turn things and a lot of stock are a lot better off outside. Martin, fair play, 100%. Thanks for the update on all that building work, and thanks for the report from the Northwest. We'll talk to you again soon, folks. Earlier, as I said, we had a chat with Monaghan man, now living in New Zealand and working in New Zealand, Olin Breenan. I had a chat with him yesterday. Let's have a listen. Delighted to be joined by the Border Fox, none other than Olin Breenan, originally from Monaghan, now living and working in New Zealand. Olin, when the Red Hands of Tyrone beat Monaghan in such a fashion as last weekend at the football, does it really bother you now anymore?
Hey, Jack, thanks for the elaborate introduction. Look, I'll quote some of my Kerry friends, "'Tis only the league." Is what my response, and maybe we'll move on after that.
The relegation, you're threatening relegation. Like, hey, no, listen, good to have you on the show. Remind us all on what time of the year it is over you at the moment.
Yeah, so obviously we're autumn here, late lactation, so we're sort of at that stage of the season where we're winding down and in the process of setting ourselves up for next year. Although, to be fair, this year, all the seasons have been way out of kilter. Well, from a farming point of view, we had a great summer. There was abundance of rain, not a lot of sunshine. And then we've sort of flicked straight from sort of a very mediocre summer to autumn. I mean, it was 6 degrees this morning, which is quite cold for this time of year. Yeah. But yeah, so that's where we're at the minute.
Of course, Olin, you had a little bit of a rough spell in the weather. Like, I mean, did you get hit badly by those storms, or how far away are you from where that kind of hit?
No, thankfully we were we missed the major brunt of it. So I guess there was two sort of major weather events post Christmas. There was a cyclone came through the end of January, and that pummeled Northland and parts of Auckland, and then it kind of brushed past us to the Coromandel. Although we got the favourable aspects of that, we got another good dousing of rain, and then about what it would have been 2-3 weeks later, then there was another cyclone came, and we were kind of in the eye of it, although it again passed us. It came down from Northland, Auckland, and shaped past to the east coast. Now, I guess it's one of those things, Jax, when it happened, you sort of seen the trauma and all the pictures and that, and you very quickly get comfortable with not being in it. However, I must acknowledge that there's some farming people in the east coast are still paying the price of that. There's been a lot of damage with silt, flooding plains and silt and orchards and dairy farms. Not so sure of any of the statistics, but I've no doubt there would have been a lot of farms had to dry their cows off. And generally in times like this, Fonterra is quite good. The cooperative spirit comes to the fore, and they'll still pay, you know, if there's milk dumped in that, they'll still pay those farmers. And I guess we're all willing to contribute to that, because some areas get hit, and that's how it rolls. So yeah, look at a slow recovery for those farmers and no income, and as you can imagine, the devastation of your farm. It doesn't just recover today or tomorrow, does it?
Yeah, no, it takes time to get over these things, both kind of mentally and, as you say, physically, in the farming sense as well. But leaving that aside, is it fair to say, I know kind of over here, like the year 2022, the milk year 2022 was a super year for Irish dairy farmers. Like, you're just coming to the end of your 2022-2023 season, as you say. Like, I mean, did you have a super year? Was it one of the best years you've had, or tell us what the story is?
Nah, so we were probably ahead of your curve, so to speak. So I guess 2021-2022 was financially our best year with the good milk price. It was an average year production wise. Despite all the sort of headaches of post-COVID and that, we got a good milk price, and we weren't feeling the full brunt of the increase of the input costs. However, 22-23 is a different story altogether. We started off with a very buoyant milk price of 9.50, which at the time I thought was quite ambitious, and that turns out to be true. And then we were getting that constant rise of input costs, namely fertilizer and fuel and crops. So in context, so physically it's been an okay year. We had a very slow start here in the Waikato. We were sort of 7-8% behind, and I thought it's game over. Although we had a summer unlike any of the other past summers of the past 5 years. So we're sitting probably 2-3% ahead on last year and we'll end up with a status quo production year. However, that's one side of the coin. We've seen sort of the guts of a dollar taken off our milk price, forecasted milk price, and easily as a share milker, 50 to 60 cents increase in our input cost. And we had a hefty tax bill from last year, which we've had to cash flow out of this year. And coupled with all those things I've talked about, it's actually going to be a pretty average year,
right? Yeah.
Financially.
Has the cost price piece begin to kind of slide back, all in? Like, I mean, maybe as you say, is it coming too late for ye now? Like, you know what I mean? But has it started, especially fertilizer, has the price started to fall back?
No, it hasn't. And that's the scary thing. Just putting some figures together in a budget for next year. And it's quite scary. You just, you know, we talk about variable costs, but a lot of them are fixed. You've still got your urea. Look, it's softened back $50 a ton, but it's still at 11, I think it's 11.25 a ton New Zealand dollars. Yeah. Just in context, yeah. That same ton of urea might have been 550, 600 pre-COVID. Okay. The other big thing, well, fuel has softened a little bit, but not back to where it has. So what we have now is we've just got massive inflation. I seen a statistic a few weeks ago from one of the banks that on-farm inflation was running at 13 to 14% compared to 10% in other industries. And we're seeing that here. I mean, every time you lift the phone now, every call out you have, you're seeing an increase on that call out. You know, it's very cliched where, like, I've looked at over the years in business, you'll have a certain segment, you might see elevated costs, but this is every element. And it's quite a hard thing to think, well, how do I rummy cub my way out of this and try and increase that margin? So it's all well and good when the milk price is high, but if we get a softening of commodities, interest rates have pretty much doubled. You were at a low of 2 and 3% around COVID. You're talking now, if you're to lock a rate now, you're talking 8 and 9%. So, you know, that's putting a significant amount on people's interest bill. Now, I don't want to sound all doom and gloomist. We've all been here before. I think the cream will rise to the top as usual and people will find their way. And look, I'll go back to the same old tune again. It's about, you know, the basics on your farm. It's about harvesting as much pasture and crop as you can in-house and try and, try and control what you can, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Fonterra are going well, is it fair to say, Olin, like in terms of, I call it, they've kind of redirected, restructured their business and kind of focusing more on the home market as opposed to kind of the South American growth and the Chinese growth and all that kind of piece. Like, is that settling in well and going down well with shareholders?
Seems to be on that front, a reasonably good satisfaction level amongst shareholders. They're getting, they're seeming to be now able to pay out a dividend. There was a while there that actual shareholders weren't getting a dividend, so seem to be delivering on that. There is a little bit of some people are a little bit concerned that maybe at the speed of some of the implementation of some of these ruling is coming very fast. Another thing that we're just waiting to hear, they're going to target the scope 3 emissions, so that'll be Fonterra will be lining that in in part of their supply agreement. But what will that look like for us farmers? So you're thinking, right, we're going to give another banging here again. Look, ultimately it is going to happen, but it's the degree of speed that these things are hitting at us. It's some people are struggling to digest that.
Yeah, and comparing to kind of other sectors within the economy, I'm sure that goes on over there as well as it does here. I mean, in terms of growth in the dairy industry over there, is it on the slide, Olin? Like, you know, I mean, is kind of the forecast from Fonterra in terms of supply pieces going out in the kind of next 2 or 3 years, is that kind of on a downward curve as opposed to kind of upward?
Yeah, it's funny. Everyone's got a different viewpoint on that. I mean, my take on it is that, yeah, we've certainly, I think the herd will potentially contract if not stay status quo. So interestingly, you're looking at, you're looking at some people calling for a reduction of the national herd. However, that's happening organically anyway. I mean, even generationally, you're seeing a lot of family farms leaving farming and sell their land off for other uses, and the, you know, the next generation is not coming through. The land thing, you know, the mass expansion's gone. And funny, this year was quite interesting. This farm that I'm on, Shermilkin on, was on the market, and you know, in the heyday of when the property was booming, you know, that had been making top dollar. But I think loosely speaking, you're probably looking at a 25-30% cut on that price per hectare. So that's good. Well, okay land, it's on peat, but location wise it's in the Golden Triangle, and that'll just give you an indication of the appetite's not there. Now the reason for that will be, I guess, maybe impending increase interest rates. There'll be a little bit of unknowns around where the whole environmental, you know, where the whole compliance thing is going to play out. And you know, if you spend big money on a farm and then you have to reduce output by 20%, so we are in a bit of a holding pen. And and even corporate farms they're not going out and buying farms like they once were 10, 15 years ago. And probably another piece of that pie is the lack of labor. Then, you know, traditionally they'd buy another farm, they'd stick a manager on. That pool of people are not available at the moment. So that there's a lot of different factors at play.
And what kind of a number, like in terms of a per hectare, dollars per hectare, what kind of number ballpark, you know, you reckon farms in your region are making at the moment? As you say, it's down 20-30%. To what kind of a number?
So I guess if you want to pick it on the high, they were making $60,000 a hectare, you know, back maybe 5-10 years ago. Okay. You're looking at more sort of 40-45, good farm between 45-50 a hectare. So these are farms now that are all probably specced up. Historically, some farms may have needed hefty investment to get them compliant and get them up to speed with effluent, but most farms are turnkey. Sound like an investor, turnkey, ready to produce. So I guess that just gives you a bit of an indicator that appetite has certainly softened.
Yeah, so that's in Irish and euros is about from the high of 35,000 hectares back down to give or take 25,000 euros per hectare. So from 35,000 euros per hectare to 25,000 euros per hectare, like that's a fair drop, as you say. Like, I mean, we heard some kind of rumblings, or there were more rumblings in terms of the investment in New Zealand now of in the carbon farming space, I call it, you know, especially on the kind of beef and sheep type operations, you know, that there's more and more of maybe investment companies looking at the carbon farming side of things rather than the livestock, you know, to be the beef or sheep especially.
Yeah, and there's certainly that. I guess that's not, dairying wouldn't be as directly affected by that, because that would be more on your marginal land. The dairy, I suppose, when you do the maths on it and run it well, it's still yielding quite well. There's no doubt that there was a lot of overseas investment buying some of these beef and sheep farms in remote areas. And sadly that these things went through, and it's changed the fabric of those areas. A bit of a domino effect, really, Jack, that you sort of, a couple of farms leave and then the core of your school is gone, and then those people move and all of a sudden you've no teachers. So I think the government finally realized what was unraveling in front of them, and I think they've tightened the rules then on these sort of blanket purchases of land. I mean, you can't blame the poor old farmer, really, you know. At the end of the day, money talks, you know. He's looking at maybe at the twilight of his career, and if he's getting big dollar, you know, you wouldn't blame him, would you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, that's their payday, as you say. Like, I mean, that you mentioned the government, and you mentioned the whole, I mean, on the political side, obviously, you know, I know some rural New Zealand dwellers will be happy that Jacinda Ardern handed in her notice, of course. But what's happening on the political front right now?
Yeah, so looking at an election year coming up, as you pointed out there, with change of prime minister. It's quite interesting. Obviously, he's not in that role very long, but he seems to be in tune. He's thrown out a few of the more sort of drastic policies, and I'm just watching closely. That was ammunition to the opposition. You know, they were kind of saying, well, if we get in power, we'll drop these things. But now they're sort of thinking, oh, hang on a minute, what are we going to do here? So whether this new person is in a bit of a honeymoon period or not, but the polls are looking okay, and that'll be of concern to the rural area. I think it'll be more of the same. Maybe they need to do like what the Dutch did and put a farmers' party mm-hmm. together and get a majority, mm-hmm. which I thought was fascinating in such an urban populated yeah. country. So, look, I think we all can criticize governments and call pot shots and whatnot, and some would argue there's an agenda or whatnot. But as food producers, at the end of the day, we're going to have to toe the party line, so to speak. And look, we can fight certain things, but globally, it's the exact same story. So I think we just have to be innovative and find some way to work with them rather than constantly fighting it. Because, you know, some of these things, we're never going to win anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Come back to your farm, Olin, a little bit. And I know you mentioned it in terms of that farm was for sale that you're now share milking on. Come back to me in terms of what's the lie of the land in terms of your business at the moment. Give me a feel for what way it's structured now at the moment.
Yeah, so a bit of a disruptive year. We're on a sort of a contract here, and we're coming to the end of that contract this current season, but we sort of were under the impression it'd just be rolled on. But anyway, the farming family we're involved with made the decision to sell the farm. So we received that news in early July, and it was back into a tailspin as what now? And this highlights again that huge uncertainty in a share milking capacity. So I guess it brought forward a couple of conversations with Anna and I as to, you know, where to and what are we doing and all the strategic questions. But as it transpired, I guess we were very lucky that we secured a larger share milking job in the locality. So as of the 1st of June, we leave this farm and head off about 20 minutes from here to an 800 cow farm. We'll be consolidating to one milking shed. We're running two parlours here, which can be challenging from a labour point of view. So that's quite exciting. We've got a couple of bit of housekeeping to do here. It's an interesting the end of a share milking contract. You've got certain provisions to put in place to leave, you know, to honour your contract. However, that's complicated even more with a new owner coming in, and you're a little bit piggy in the middle a little bit, just trying to navigate things through. But look, it's the old cliche, communication is key there, working through that. So yeah, no, that's where we're headed. It's scarily only 8 to 10 weeks away.
Oh yeah. And the type of system that you're running there, Olin, like, you know, has been kind of, I suppose, making the best use of forage. Will that be the same type of system that you run now on the 800 cow operation?
Yeah, thankfully we found a system that aligned with our philosophy, and I must admit it's not that easy. You know, there is a lot more intensity in a lot of systems, and with sort of feed systems in place that maybe mightn't be my cup of tea. At one stage we were prepared to consider an opportunity with that. I guess maybe we were looking at the wrong drivers and location was a big thing, but as it transpired, this will be a similar system two. Has got better facilities for feeding supplements. It's got a feed pad on it compared to feeding in the paddock. So I think it'll be more of the same, hopefully, and get a bit more efficiency with just the one milking unit.
Okay. And what type of a parlour is it, or a milking shed, as you call it over there? Like, what time?
So I've got a 50 bale rotary. So you like to yourself there, you probably have to slow the table down for you, but you know, a good Monaghan man or an equivalent would take it in their stride, in their youth anyway.
10 minutes around for me. I saw an advert in the journal. You're looking for help actually, Olin, from July onwards, are you? Are you only accepting applicants from Monaghan?
No, it is an advantage. Certainly, you have Monaghan genes in your blood. We are trying to cut costs, so I guess a bit of calving blood probably wouldn't do any harm either, you know, just to really hone in on the cost saving. But joking aside, no harm in a shameless plug there. You are correct indeed, Jack. We're looking for a couple of people, actually. And look, we've had great success over the years with numerous Irish people and UK people, and they've all went and done their own thing and have created careers on their own back. I'm laughing at Johnny Sexton's interview at the weekend when he said we did exactly, the coaches told us what to do and we did the exact opposite. Lots of my lads probably have done that. They've done all right.
No, you're right. it's when you're quality, you can get away with those kind of things, like Holland. That's the next big test for our guys, of course. Like is the World Cup, and it'll be interesting to. Was there any much reaction to Ireland winning the Grand Slam? Obviously, it's not big on the radar out there, but I mean, and I suppose Robertson taking over in terms of the coaching of the All Blacks was probably more in the news. But was there any much chat about the Irish?
Oh, look, there is. It's probably a higher profile than you'd think, Jack. I suppose with two New Zealand born players on the team, but then secondly, knowing that. I suppose, look, we're able to hold our own amongst the rival with the All Blacks. But I had a TV programme on Monday night, The Breakdown. It's like a chat show thing. And interviewed Ian Foster. And then afterwards, one of the crew was saying, you know, oh, the All Blacks in great position. We can come in at a bit of a low burner under here. And they were saying Ireland has to learn how to live with this big target on their back. And look, it's all very valid points. Although I don't think the X factor players aren't currently in that New Zealand squad, and the new coach won't have an influence on that. But look, they'll be thereabouts because they're seasoned campaigners in the World Cup finals, and that's the key, isn't it?
Correct, absolutely. No, you're dead right. Look, it's bound to make for some good sport. But listen, Olin, we'll probably talk to you before then, and. As you say, the best of luck in looking for someone to help out. Have you an email or something that guys should contact if they were interested? Or
yeah. So I don't know if you're able to, or I can read it out. It's bannorlimited@gmail.com, and it'll be on the advert that's in the journal there. So
we might get it up on the screen there. So bannorlimited@gmail.com.
That'd be great. And look, we'd. Gladly welcome anyone out here. I'm not saying this to promote it too much, but for any young dairy enthusiasts, it's a fantastic opportunity. You can get out in the working holiday visa, and I'm sure, as I say, you're a long time at home. If you want to carve out a career in Ireland, it's good to do that before you get too committed.
Excellent, top class experience, well worthwhile. Super job, Olin. Thanks for taking the time to chat, and best of luck harvesting that maize.
Thanks, Jack. All the best
out. Right, folks. Good to chat to Olin yesterday and all that's happening in New Zealand. That's it for another week. Thanks for watching, and indeed, thanks for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Adam, Darren and Martin. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. We'll be back again next week with that Skip special that I talked about earlier. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.